The next case is 09-1296, International Business Machines Corporation versus Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Bernard.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. IBM bought computers, high-end computers, to use in its data center here in Ohio. And in doing so, it qualified for an incentive in what's known as the Electronic Information Services Provision, sometimes called EIS. And this is an incentive designed to encourage the development of data centers in the state of Ohio. The way it works is when you buy the computers, you pay the dollar, but you're entitled to a 25-cent refund from the state of Ohio for these computers. So the applications were filed, they were considered by the tax commissioner, and they were approved. So the tax was refunded. However, no interest came with that. And that's the sole issue today. We're asking that interest should be paid on these refunds simply to recognize the time value of money.
Was there a delay in issuing these, or are you asking for interest just for them to be processed in the ordinary course, even if they're essentially timely under the statute?
Your Honor, there isn't any particular time frame the tax commissioner has to work with. And it is a fact, unfortunately, that tax cases take a long time. And so 9 years is a very long time. The fact is that a lot of cases take the time, but there's compensation for the time value of money. So we're not assaulting the tax commissioner and faulting them. We wish it would have taken less time, even putting aside the interest. But the fact is it did take that long, and at least we should be compensated for the time value of money. And there is no requirement for a time period within which the tax commissioner has to act on any refund claims.
Does the statute provide for the payment of interest in this instance?
It does. I'm sorry. Absolutely, Your Honor.
So the statute that provides the 25% refund also contains a provision that says an interest shall be paid on that refund.
Yes, Your Honor, because that section, 5739.071, cross-references 5739.07 and 5741.10. So that section does. But we really should be looking at the interest section, because this is an interest case. And that's 5739.132. That's set out in the brief of appellant first time on page 3, and then it's in the appendix at page 51. And it says interest shall be paid in very clear and simple terms. Interest shall be paid on any refund granted pursuant to sections 5739.07 and 5741.10. What that means is that interest is paid on all sales and use tax refunds, not some, all. There isn't a class of these that don't have interest.
And so is this customarily done, and this is the first time that the interest has not been made on these refunds?
Well, IBM has not received any. The tax commissioner has said that they don't. We are aware of a case where it was, but the tax commissioner says that was an inadvertent. But I think that the policy of the tax department, at least, I'm not sure when it began, but at some point they said no interest on any of these refunds.
Mr. Bernard, what is the amount of money at issue here with respect to the interest for 9 years?
I do not know, Your Honor. We have not calculated that. But it's under the statute, it goes back from the time of the payments. But it should have been paid, and it is continuing to accrue. That's true, but it should have been paid at the time, and it wouldn't have been an issue.
And what's the rate of interest that you're seeking?
Well, Your Honor, it is tied into a rate that's established every year. We looked at the average over the entire year period of time, and it was 7% on average. Now today, it's 3%. So right now, this refund is accruing at only 3% because interest rates are low. But the General Assembly has provided a floating rate based on what the market is showing. So we're asking you to look at the interest statute. And in 1998, that changed. And before, you would not be able to get interest on refunds except when it was pursuant to an assessment. In 1998, they changed it. The General Assembly changed it and said interest is provided on all refunds. Now, the task commissioner is saying, well, there's not anything explicit enough. But even on that, we can show that the cross-reference ties this down. And the analysis is a little different for sales and use tax, but the use tax one is just very clear. So you have the reference in the interest statute for any refund that is granted pursuant to sections, and then it says 574110. And six of these seven refunds were granted pursuant to that section. And so that's all that we need in order to prevail here. Now, it also, because of the cross-reference in the interest statute to 573907, we get it for sales tax, but you have to take a couple of steps there, steps that are required under the proper way of analyzing statutes. And so what we have is there are two very important doctrines here. One is the cross-reference, and the other is impera materia. So when 5739.071 says, look to 573907, that language is as if it were rewritten in 573907.1.
Counsel, one question. It doesn't, it's not contingent, the interest is not contingent on refunds that are due because of erroneous or illegal withholdings. It's any refund that is due?
That is correct, Your Honor. So if we look at the interest statute, which is 5739.132 in B, you've got two different tests, before 98 and beginning January 1, 1998. Before 1998, illegal and erroneous is there. Mm-hmm. After 1998, they took it out. So the task commissioner is arguing the wrong standard, the prior standard. The current standard doesn't have that requirement. But even if it did, the 25% portion of this is illegal and erroneous in the sense that it has to be prepaid, but it also has to be refunded.
But and it's not illegal or erroneous. It's just that's the scheme that's built into the statute. And then if you are deemed to be qualified to receive that refund, it then flows back to your client.
I agree with what you're saying, Your Honor, but I think that speaks to the timing. You got to pay it first. If the tax commissioner does not refund it, it would be illegal or erroneous. It would be illegal or erroneous for the tax commissioner not to refund it.
But he did refund it.
He did refund it.
Okay, so it doesn't qualify as illegal or erroneous because it has come back to you or your client.
No, Your Honor, I don't think so for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think it still qualifies as illegal or erroneous for purposes of this statute. And one authority I would cite for that is the tax commissioner himself. Because if you look at 573907, which is the general refund statute for sales tax, and 574110, they both have that language illegal and erroneous with respect to the tax. Nevertheless, the tax commissioner approved the refund. So there's an internal inconsistency with his own argument. That language is in there with respect to those, not in the interest part, but it's in the other part, yet he approved the refund. So the illegal and erroneous cannot be a hurdle to this, to this interest payment, either because it was taken out of the statute, or because for this purpose, and I understand, I do have to pay it up front, but for purposes of this refund, it remains illegal and erroneous payment. So
your claim is under 5937132B.
Yes, Your Honor.
And doesn't that say that interest shall be paid from the date of the overpayment?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that generally refers to, for example, a sales tax that has been collected but over-collected, and then when that refund comes back, interest is due on the amount of the excess.
Well, that's true, but now we have two pieces.
But now we're looking at a different application. This was an incentive to provide a business development, and a refund would be made of 25% if X number of dollars had been spent. There really wasn't any overpayment as I look at it, and I'm wondering if you can help me determine why the language, interest paid from the date of the overpayment should be applied to this situation as opposed to the sales tax situation.
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two pieces here. There's the 75% and the 25%. And the 25% is actually an overpayment.
Isn't it an incentive to have a company get into the development as opposed to an overpayment of taxes in as in the sales tax situation?
No, Your Honor, it is in fact an overpayment. And one way you can look at this is that some people get the money right up front. So
I don't understand what you mean, some get it up front.
All right, so if there's something called a direct pay, and that means that you pay directly yourself, you don't either file the use tax return, the normal one, or pay the vendor, they get that 25 cents right now. And so I believe that 25 cents is in fact an overpayment in the same way that it would be if it were an exemption. The only difference between the exemption that you're referring to that would have and be an overpayment and the 25 cents is administratively I have to pay it first to get it back. But conceptually, that exemption, the overpayment you refer to, the dollar there, is the same as the 25 cents here. And we're only talking about the means of getting it back. So the tax commissioner gets a chance to look at it, and that's fine. But if there's a delay in doing that, it makes a difference in how much you're receiving, and we ought to be able to get back the time value of money. And that's the basis for what we're saying.
Mr. Berner, do I understand that you're saying this advance, the advance you consider the overpayment?
Yes, Your Honor. It is an advance because we qualify. It should be 75 cents, but administratively that doesn't work well, so they say pay the whole thing and get it back. Okay. But it really conceptually isn't different than if I claimed a 75% exemption and I should be treated the same way. That 25 cents is, in fact, an overpayment. And I have to pay it, but it's still an overpayment. I would reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Bernard. Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court, I wanted to address some of the questions that Justice has asked. Justice O'Donnell, you asked about the administrative practice. Actually, at the Board of Tax Appeals, we presented to the board a certificate from the sales tax refund people. And it provided that in every case but one where it was erroneous out of over 50, that in every case the commissioner has not granted the right to recover interest on these partial credits for EIS equipment. So, inception of this EIS credit.
Is that exhibit in the record?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It's part of the additional, it's a statement of additional authority because Mr. Bernard attempted to establish in the one instance the commissioner erred, and he presented that, and in rebuttal we presented that information because actually the hearing, there was no evidentiary hearing in this matter, it was waived. And I wanted to also address your question in the court generally about whether there's an overpayment. The statute requires an illegal or erroneous overpayment of tax, and this court in Key Services unanimously held that this partial credit is not an erroneous or illegal it's not for an erroneous or illegal overpayment of tax. So that's very well settled by this court. And ironically, Mr. Bernard was the attorney in that case, and he argued precisely the opposite position he's arguing now. In that case, he said the credit
was granted.
Well, isn't
that what lawyers do from time to time to make earn a living?
You got
to
take the best shot
lawyer.
You got basically, there, Mr. Hubbard.
So I don't blame him, but I think, in full disclosure, maybe he should have.
Counsel, what is the policy basis for the direct pay? You only have to pay what you'd get after the rebate, and in their case, they have to pay the full amount, and then they later get a rebate or a refund or something.
Yeah, excellent question, Your Honor. They actually raised the direct pay permit issue at the board and then in their brief here abandoned it. And I think maybe because they felt our response was pretty good, which was there are special privileges and obligations that attach to being a direct pay permit holder. If you're a direct pay permit holder, you have to, first of all, get certification from the state and you have to meet certain requirements. And basically what you do if you're a direct pay permit holder is rather than pay tax to your vendor when you buy something subject to sales tax, you actually give them the direct pay permit and say, we pay it directly to the state. And the state enters into an agreement as to what percentage of your purchases are subject to tax and what aren't. It's typically in the situation where when somebody purchases something that may be subject to sales tax or may not, depending on its use. And so that's a really specialized situation. IBM could have applied for that, but they didn't. And if they had been a direct payment holder, then it would have been a fundamentally different situation. And also the remedy is quite different. And if you have to pay, the state has to pay from its fiscal coffers a refund of interest, you know, not only the tax, but the interest. That's a hit to the coffers of the state, whereas the direct pay permit holder is simply getting it right from the beginning. So there's no payment in the future. And Justice Lanziger asked about the interest in this case, and there's mention of 9 years. Well, that's only for the first refund claim that was filed, and they waited 4 years before they filed the refund claim. So we're really talking 4 years where the commissioner couldn't possibly have granted interest. And if we look more currently, we see the refund claims were filed in 2007, one of them, so the commissioner acted very timely with respect to that. So this suggestion somehow that, although Mr. Burnett was gracious in saying it wasn't necessarily the commissioner's fault, I think the actual truth of the matter is that these are very fact-intensive situations, and there are lots of records and review, and it's an involved process. So there can be a delay, but oftentimes the commissioner issues them very promptly. In this situation, they didn't present any record to show who was delaying or who wasn't. But I can suggest that it was probably a combination of looking at records, and the commissioner can't issue something without looking at the records, and that could very well have been the problem in this instance, given that in the more recent refund claims, the commissioner issued it very promptly. So that would suggest that it's probably on the part of the taxpayer. But again, that's speculation because they waived a hearing on this. I might also point out that there's a long line of cases that require that interest on tax refunds be expressly set forth by the General Assembly. And even in the sales tax, we see an evolution of that. Initially, there was no right to interest on sales tax refunds of any kind. And then in 1974, the General Assembly expanded it where the commissioner has issued an assessment, and it's subsequently determined, and that assessment's paid, a refund's filed, and it's determined that the assessment was illegal or erroneous. And then in 1997, it was expanded to include the situation where a taxpayer voluntarily pays the tax, then seeks a refund on the basis that they shouldn't have, that it was illegal or erroneous. And there are other provisions of the sales tax law, like this credit. There's a bad debt deduction that is similarly not subject to interest. And so if the court were to accept Mr. Bernard's position, then it would also mean, by the same analysis, the bad debt deduction would be entitled to interest. And of course, that would be a major hit to the coffers of the state, and I think in derogation of the rights of the General Assembly's express manifest intent not to have interest, the right to interest in such situations. And then we have the general refund statute, the certificate of abatement statute, that applies whenever a state tax doesn't have its own refund provision, then the default is the certificate of abatement. And that's in Title 57, or Chapter 5703.05B. And that doesn't provide for interest now. So the general rule is, in this general refund isn't entitled to tax interest either. And this court held that in the Chicago Freight case, which is the most recent case prior to this one, addressing the situation where someone is seeking the right to recover interest in the absence of express statutory authorization for that. So for all those reasons, we would ask that the Board of Tax Appeals decision be affirmed, and that would be following the General Assembly's express legislative intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. Mr. Bernard, you saved a little more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Several things. First of all, he mentions that in 1974, interest was provided, but only for assessments. It's interesting, at that time, if a taxpayer were assessed, they didn't pay interest to the state of Ohio. They might pay penalty, but there would be no interest. In 74, they imposed interest on the assessments and then provided for interest on the refunds. But then, and the one we care about, the amendment we care about in 97 for 1998, they opened it up at that point, and they didn't pick and choose which parts, which conditions, what happens before you get the interest. We're not arguing that the abatement provision, which is a fallback provision if there's no refund anywhere, is entitled to interest. It isn't. Because what we're saying is that this particular refund provision is entitled to interest because the General Assembly explicitly provided for that. You use cross-reference to get to that explicit statement. You use impera materia, but the express provision is in here. And the other cases that are cited simply aren't.
Counsel, does your position depend upon finding that there is, that the original payment of the 100% of the tax is an overpayment?
If
we don't get to that point, is that the end of the argument?
Well, the interest is from the date of the overpayment. So from that perspective, the question of whether interest is available isn't addressed by that question. So that clearly wouldn't dispose of it. But it is in fact an overpayment, or we shouldn't get it back.
Why would it not be more like a rebate? Let's just take a commercial analogy from a store. You buy a stepladder for $100. If you send in the little coupon timely with the proper documentation, you get $25 back as a rebate. But the rebate is timely, and your original payment was not an overpayment, but that was the purchase price, because if you hadn't filed the proper documentation, you wouldn't be getting any money back. Why isn't that analogy appropriate here?
Your Honor, the General Assembly has gone a different direction than that, and it's appropriate that they do that. So those rebates, so many of them are missed. It's aggravating to go through all that problem to get it back. I don't think the state of Ohio should be following that model. It's a terrible model. Instead, what we have is that interest is paid. So the converse of this is, so there's an incentive. There's a rebate. And it's supposed to be 25%. If I get it quickly, it's 25%. If I get it over a longer period of time, then my rebate shrinks. And I think when the General Assembly said you get 25%, they meant it. And that you don't allow it to be diminished. I'm not saying the commissioner did it on purpose, but the effect of what the commissioner did is to take the 25% that we were entitled to and shrink it down to something less. And that's why I don't think that that's an analogy that the state of Ohio should follow, Your Honor. There are no more questions. I ask you to reverse the Board of Tax Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Bernard. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.